Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dockiel, and today my guest is Pete Zayas. You might also know him as the Laker Film Room. He's all over Twitter, provides great content about the Lakers and the NBA in general. And today we're going to talk about LeBron and the many different ways his arrival to LA affects the Lakers, the Clippers, the city of LA in general. So, you ready to tip it off? Pete,
let's do it, man. So glad we can finally make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it many times. We've talked about having a lunch one time and we've canceled that. Like, we rarely make our connections. It's like missing a flight every time we try to make something happen.
The trick is to catch each other, at least me, when we just woke up, which is when we're recording this.
Yeah, so. that's what you got to do. You know, grab the cup of tea, coffee, whatever it is, and let me get you on a mic and see what I can get you saying half asleep. Let's kind of just dive right into it. Obviously, the Lakers landed the biggest fish, really, you could have landed in the past few years. And, you know, LeBron James is finally a Laker. There was rumors about it as soon as the finals ended last year. I think the Ringer came out with a piece saying he's most likely coming to LA. I don't know if you can correct me if there are pieces ahead of that were saying that stuff was coming, but you know, and the excitement has built with the Lakers. I mean, with drafting Lonzo Ball, we saw last summer what summer league was like with Lonzo playing. I mean, it was a madhouse trying to get to watch a Lakers summer league game. You had to get there at 1 p.m. for a 7:30 game to kind of, and if you moved, you lost your seat. That didn't matter. And all of that. So, you know, let's kind of just start in with what's your excitement level. You know, you're covering the Lakers for The Athletic. You've been covering them for Foreign Blue and Gold and everywhere else you write.
Yeah. I mean, I am a little different as a media member in that I'm unabashedly a fan. And so this is the first time as a media fan kind of hybrid, I get to cover a good Lakers team. And I'm really excited about that. It's funny because it's ironic in that I am closer to the Lakers than I've ever been in terms of access and the amount of time that I spend on this team. And I feel like I have less of a feel for this team than I have in a long time. There are just so many moving parts and new elements, and just adding, you know, the best player in the world to this mix of young guys who are in these years where guys normally make their biggest improvements between their second and third years or first and second years. It's normally when you see the biggest leaps amongst players, but that's not a certainty, and you don't know how much it will be. So, yeah, it's just funny. I'm really excited, and it's kind of feels like this journey into the unknown, despite the fact that I cover and spend all of my time on them.
Yeah. And it's not surprising that you don't have a feel for, I mean, they brought in 8 new players. You know, yeah. some veteran guys, you know, there's a level you got to feel for. They've drafted, you know, a few more pieces. So it's a whole thing. This is a whole new team. It's not like some teams where they just add in one or two guys and may or may not play or whatever, might be in the rotation, might not, you know. Besides, you know, looking at LeBron, who came in this summer, drafted or free agent, you're also kind of excited for that might surprise somebody?
I like the JaVale signing. The Lakers haven't had an above-the-rim type threat, and I think he's the kind of guy that his pick-and-roll gravity really helps out your shooters on the weak side. But he's not going to play a ton of minutes. He's got the asthmatic condition and all that. But I do think that he was a good pickup. And I really like Svete Mykhailiuk, who is their second-round pick. He's a guy that I've been advocating, I think, should see minutes sooner rather than later. I really think they got a steal with that 47th pick as a sniper shooter type of guy that the Lakers only have one other guy in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope who can really knock it down coming off of screens. And I think that Svi provides an element that the Lakers just don't have a ton of on the roster, but it's a crowded wing rotation. So I'm not sure that he's going to be able to do that, but I'm very excited about his future.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to crack that rotation, I think. I mean, he it's almost like he has to go so far and above it in practice that I think that he gets those opportunities. But you are right though. I mean, like, he shot the piss out of the ball at summer.
And the Lakers have all of these. This Lakers team is going to be the first time in NBA history you had three of the top 10 guys in assists from the year before in Lonzo, LeBron James, and Rondo. That's never happened before. But somebody's got to finish those opportunities that are created, right? And he can do that. And he's not a bad defender. He's got some ball handling ability that he really wasn't able to show off at Kansas, that he played more point guard on, you know, international competition. And so I really think, I mean, the alternatives are like Lance Stephenson. That was probably my least favorite acquisition of the summer for the Lakers. I don't think the Lakers need guys that have the ball in their hands a ton. I think they need guys that can finish the opportunities that those shot creators will get for them.
No, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the most important thing, because you're right. Like, you have three ball handlers already in Lonzo, LeBron, and Rondo. And I think, you know, at this point you need finishers. You don't need shooters. You need shot makers and all that fun jokes. And cause like I could be a shooter, I'm just not going to make a lot, or any,
right.
You know, so it's
likewise. Yeah.
Right. So it's that kind of thing. So I think that's the key, that that's what they're going to have to find out in camp, is who are the guys who are going to finish, who's going to, you know, when LeBron drops a dime, who's the guy that's going to make sure he finishes in traffic or you know, through getting fouled and getting and-one and whatnot. So I think that's going to be a challenge. I also think there's going to be more opportunities. Like, I'm very excited for the Lonzo-LeBron pairing. I wrote about it, I think, in June, just before LeBron announced. I was like, well, if he comes to LA, I think this is a great fit for Lonzo, just in the fact of LeBron's never played with somebody with this kind of passing IQ that, you know, Lonzo has, and now Rondo has as well. You know, like, there's going to be, I think we might even see LeBron having more fun off the ball, cutting and making moves, and just him making a cut is going to attract the entire defense and open up stuff up for other guys and the young kids to make the leaps. And Brandon Ingram's going to have opportunities to kind of to really blow up and get going. So I think it's going to be an interesting seeing how you know, Coach Walton puts it all together on the court, because that's going to be what they have to figure out. Where do you play these guys? I mean, I would be shocked if you play Lonzo and Rondo together. I just don't think you can. But I'm also kind of curious. Like, let's do it for 20 minutes and see what happens.
For sure. Yeah, that I want to see him experiment with those sorts of things. I mean, I think Lonzo has to shoot the way that he did in college for that to work. You know, a lot of what Steve Alford did with Lonzo at UCLA was Lonzo ran a lot of like shooting guard type of actions coming off of floppies and things like that when he was at UCLA. And that's something that if he can get back to that point or even just competent coming off of screens and things like that as a shooter, I think that that's a potentially an excellent pairing. But yeah, as it stands right now, I don't think that they can play a ton of minutes together. But those types of guys are the guys that LeBron was kind of pining for, right? Kind of these playmaking, high IQ guys. You look at the roster in Cleveland, and it was built a certain way, but not, he had to bear so much of the shot creation responsibility. I would imagine it was, he led the league in minutes per game last two seasons, and in terms, he played tough minutes in that he's very good at understanding when he can take breaks within the game. But when it came down to it, in terms of shot creation, it was LeBron and not a whole lot else. So I think, yeah, he's going to have fun. If you look at his synergy numbers and the tape of him when he's the screen setter on a pick and roll, he's devastating, you know. And when he's able to operate off of the ball a little bit as a cutter and things like that, he's fantastic. And those are lower, what's the word I'm looking for? There's less wear and tear that I think comes from those type of possessions, you know? And I think that, yeah, he's has the infrastructure around him, but it's going to be curious seeing him play without, he's always had that kind of five out spacing, you know, shooters all over the court type of guys around him, or at least for the last several years in a lot of respects. And it's not as clear if the Lakers are going to be able to fill those roles. There's questions on Brandon Ingram's volume, three-point shooting, Lonzo's accuracy. I think Kuzma fits in very well with him, but all in all, the Lakers don't have the same type of shooters that other teams that LeBron has had.
Yeah, and that's going to be the challenging side of it. But the other aspect, too, is if he doesn't have to bear so much of the playmaking responsibility, there we might even see a little bit of a better LeBron on the defensive end as well, just because I don't think people understand the toll it takes. You know, when you're responsible for 90% of the points your team's going to score, you're going to save yourself on defense just because you're not going to have the energy for both. And I think that's an important aspect that we don't really talk about too much with players, in the sense of, you know, when he gets that kind of alleviated off of him, that burden, you know, to a degree taken off him, I think he's going to be able to have more energy to chase guys or come down on the weak side and rotate over, because that was something that was definitely missing in Cleveland. Like, he just,
yeah,
defensively just blown. I mean, you've seen it, because I know you've been studying him since his announcement. Like, he just blown coverage after blown coverage.
Oh,
and it was just a matter of times of just, like, I would watch it, like, I don't even know if he cares. But it was
right. It's not like he doesn't know his rotations. Yeah, right? He knows what his rotations are supposed to be. He does. I don't think he had it in the tank. And yeah, I think he was saving, you know, for the playoffs and things like that to, you know, conserve himself. But I absolutely agree with the point that you're making, that having those burdens off of his shoulders. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see a great version of LeBron on the defensive end again, but I think he'll be more consistent, not just blowing coverage after coverage.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a key thing. The other thing on the offensive end, and I wrote this a few weeks ago, I'm just plugging all my stuff. This is fun. This is what happens when you have your own podcast. You just plug your own stuff. Like, ah,
that's right. That's what it's there for. Yeah.
You know, I wrote, and like, I honestly really want to see him in the post a lot. You know, I think there's a lot of actions that they could run with his passing ability, and teams are going to have to double him in the post. I think that it's something that he's slowly have starting to kind of drift there, but I think this needs to be the year he kind of dives in. And I'm almost to the extent of, like, hell, you could even run the triangle out of it with him in the post. I mean, I don't know how, I mean, spacing wise is tough with the number of shooters and whatnot, but there's a lot of good action out of the triangle that you could run by just putting the ball in the post in LeBron's hand. When you have a guy that's a passer like him and a creator the way he is, and the IQ he has, like, I think it'd just be a fun thing to watch him kind of operate in the post. And again, it's also, it's taxing, but also not as taxing as running a pick and roll every time, you know?
Yes. There's, very much so.
You know, it's not as energy draining. And I think that's why we saw guys as they got older, you know, MJ went into the post. We saw Kobe go into the post. You know, I think it's something I kind of am hopeful to see, you know, him do that. And we know he added the picture, and he's looking like Hulk LeBron, kind of thing. you know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you think we're going to see more of that? Do you think that's something that's in the works, or what's your?
Yeah, very much so. I think this roster was constructed. It was kind of peculiar watching it transpire. The Lakers didn't pursue prototypical centers. They let Brook Lopez walk at a very cheap deal out over to Milwaukee. But I think we're going to see a lot more of LeBron at the five this season than he's played in the past. And in terms of where he's on the court, he had a lot of elbow touches for Cleveland, where they'd run like flex motion and things off of that, where basically he has a live dribble and he's in a triple threat situation and guys are running off a screen, you know, cutting off a screen, setting screens, and he's distributing from there. I think you're going to see that in LA. Lakers ran similar actions with Julius Randle, with him in the high post. And in terms of like low post type of play, I very much think that LeBron is kind of destined for that with his body type, with him getting older, exactly what you said about the wear and tear. I have a concern in that the Lakers are terrible at setting screens. And I'm curious if, from your NBA experience, if I view this as like a chicken or the egg type of thing. Are they terrible at setting screens because they never get the ball when they actually do set good screens and make hard cuts, right? Or do they never get the ball because they never set good screens and they never set hard cuts? You know what I mean? Like, it's young guys who don't necessarily understand the value of, I'll watch the same, you know, Lakers will run a split cut, which for the listeners, it's, you know, when the guy has the ball in the post and then the guy who made the entry pass and then the perimeter position next to him, they come together and will cut off of each other. And now, when the Lakers do that, it's just total crap going through the motions. It's like, and then I watch Golden State do it, and they're, it's with so much purpose, and you see so many layups and so many wide open shots out of that. So I'm curious, Mo, from your experience, kind of that chicken or the egg question, is that a thing? Like, does having a guy like LeBron that's great at making those decisions make guys cut harder, make guys set better screens?
Yeah, I mean, it helps. When you say it's a chicken, it's kind of both, you know, and I know that's a cop-out of an answer. But, you know, when you know you're going to get the ball, you're going to run harder. We saw it last year in transition. Guys knew Lonzo was going to kick the ball ahead if you were open.
Great point.
So guys would run, you know, you would do that. So there's definitely an aspect of like, when you know these opportunities are going to come, you're going to do them better, you know, and when you know they're not, then you're going to run through the motions, you know, and you're right. Cause I've watched a ton of doing my homework and watching a lot of the Lakers stuff, and their screen setting's terrible cause they just don't even touch a guy. You know, and I don't think some of it is the value of these young guys not understanding how important screen setting is. Like, honestly, to me, the best screener in the NBA, it's going to sound weird, is Steph Curry.
Steph Curry.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to me. I mean, he gets it. He knows that when I set a good screen, either that guy's going to be open or I'm going to be open. But one of us is going to be open, and that's really kind of has led to him getting so many open looks and things like that, because teams – you know, they react to the cuts and whatnot. So it's a whole thing behind it, and that's something that the younger kids have to learn and get that understanding. You know, and there are opportunities of, hey, I'm not going to touch the guy, I'm just going to slip. But that comes after you've hit the guy four times, you know, or you've set the screens. You can't just slip constantly. And I think that's kind of the development and where the coaching kind of comes along. But it also helps having LeBron, because, you know, when LeBron has the ball, he's not going to miss guys, you know, and the same thing, you know, Lonzo was really good. Obviously, we know how great of a passer he is. He's great at it. So guys know to, when he has the ball, they're going to get it. But we all know when certain guys have a ball, you're like, man, that's the black hole.
Right.
That ain't coming out. And you could see it you can see the purpose of cutting from guys, from one who has the ball, you know, if they know that this guy, if I cut here, this guy is going to be looking for me. You know, the Cavs were great cut. They cut well as a team,
yep.
You know, mm-hmm. When they ran their elbow action and Kevin Love would come off that screen you know, it would be a pin down, but he would always curl it. I mean, he'd get layups out of it just because he knew if I get open, LeBron's going to put the ball only where I can catch it and where I can score from it. And that's something that's going to kind of dawn on these kids at training camp. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be he's going to make a pass, and the dudes are going to be, you know, they're going to fumble it because they weren't expecting it. But they're like,
right.
Oh, he can make that pass? Sweet. You know, next time I'm going to really cut in with the intentions to score or the intention with kind of a force or a gravity and try to draw somebody into it. And I think that just comes along also playing as you get older and things like that and developing. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how their screening changes, because that's such a key thing. You know, like you mentioned the Warriors. I mean, that's their game. They're all good screen setters. I mean, KD has had to improve. I don't even know if he's gotten to that point where I could even say he's a good screen setter. But, you know, those other guys, they all set screens. Klay sets screens, you know, and makes contact and then reacts. And you know, I think that's something that, if you want to emulate the Warriors, it's screen setting. Everybody wants to emulate their shooting. That's not really possible. It's screen setting that you want
to
emulate.
And to add to that point, it's also the other component of it is the ability to read screens, knowing when to flare, knowing when to curl, do things like that. That's another thing that the young Lakers are very poor at, is understanding how to read the defender, how to set up screens. Like, I watch Klay, so I totally agree with you about Steph being the premier screen setter in the NBA. I remember having a kid in high school ball who could just shoot the heck out of the ball. So it was just a matter of, how do we get this kid the greatest degree of volume as possible? And I showed him Steph tape, you know, and it was like, set back screens like Steph and voila, you're going to be open, or it's going to be a dunk for our big, you know?
Right.
And sure as heck, as soon as he saw that afterward, he was doing that because he saw the value in it. But there's also setting up guys for screens. To me, Klay is the best in the league at doing that, in terms of understanding how to run guys off of screens, understanding every, you know, if guys overplay high side, understanding your counter, cutting across the baseline to the weak side, you'll have an open shot there, and cutting hard, you know, setting guys up in that way. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And part of why they're great shooters is because they understand it's not just a matter of them knocking down open shots. They understand how to get themselves open shots in the first place. And so that's something that having LeBron will be helpful in the respect of a leadership component as well. Because when guys don't do that, he's going to point it out to them, and he has the gravitas for them to listen to him.
Before we dive into like LeBron's effect in the locker room, I got to ask you a random question. I'm pulling you in. I told you I wouldn't, but now I'm going to just, it occurred to me to pull you in.
Okay.
Of the new guys, You're at a wedding. All the new Lakers have arrived, not including LeBron, because that's the easy question.
Okay.
Pick two of the new guys that you're going to pull into a photo booth in one of those playful you know, it's become a trend now at every wedding. You know, you have the photo booth and you wear some weird hat or whatever or whatnot. Who are the two new Lakers that you're pulling into your photo booth?
To have a good time at a party. That's what we're looking for here.
Yeah. You're gonna go into the photo booth. Who are your two new guys?
Man, give me JaVale and Lance Stevenson and a night out with a fairly unlimited budget, and whether it's a wedding or elsewhere, and we're gonna make some things happen.
You know, and I'm telling you now, Pete, that's the correct answer. Normally, there's not a correct answer, but that's the correct answer. I think that those are the two guys you want.
Like if we're at the same wedding and I get a chance to have like an hour long conversation with somebody, it's Rondo, right? Because I think that guy's brilliant and he has his warts for sure. But I would love to pick his brain. I think he's a basketball genius. But yeah, if we're going to have fun, it's those two dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I only bring that up because my friends at Brand Active Media do just that. They bring the photo booth to you. They've done high level events. They've done the NFL Pro Bowl. They've done events at the LA Galaxy. They've done the NFL Draft even. I believe they had a booth at the All-Star Game. But they also do smaller events, weddings and whatnot. And if you mention that the Jump Ball sent you over at Brand Active Media, you tell them that Mo sent you, they'll allow you to print all your stuff for free. You know, a lot of their stuff, you can use social media and tag it and all that stuff, but they can also give you a nice little printout. So tell them that Mo sent you, brandactivemedia.com. Check them out for the next time you have a private event. You know, I think like AYSO soccer starting up, why not have fun with the photo day, you know, and let's have a photo booth day and do all that stuff. So Brand Active Media, check those guys out. Pete, let's get to the locker room, because that's the big thing, right? This is a relatively young locker room. It's been for a long time. Now it's getting older. You also have some volatile guys in there. You know, Lance Stevenson's a volatile kind of personality. JaVale McGee's a quirky dude. The kids play all the time, trying to drag each other in the mud in a fun way, not in a negative way, on Instagram and bust on each other. You know, what's the effect LeBron's going to have in that locker room? We know he's the leader. He's walking in already with the leadership mantle.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic in that, and part of the reason why, you know, the Lakers brought in some, let's say, characters on one-year deals with JaVale and Rondo and Lance Stevenson, Michael Beasley. But the important parts of this team and the guys that are going to be here likely going forward are LeBron and a bunch of young guys. And just from a workplace perspective, that's an interesting dynamic, right? To have one guy that's really the most important guy on the roster be 10 to 12 years older than your other really important guys. You're at different stages of your life. The thing about the young guys, though, and this is very much something that Magic and Pelinka have tried to cultivate with the guys that they've shipped out amongst the young guys and the guys that they've kept, they bust on each other on Instagram. They're silly. I've been around them in the locker room. They're very much young guys in some way, but they work hard. They are about basketball. They are very much trying to better themselves. They compete every single day. They are doing all the voluntary stuff. They've been at the facility throughout the summer. I think that there is going to be a baseline respect from LeBron just off of that. You don't have any of the guys just kind of screwing around. But I do think that LeBron is going to have, I mean, LeBron has a ton of power wherever he goes. But in a locker room with, there isn't really, I mean, Rondo is probably the secondary leader, but how long is Rondo going to be on the team, right? He's just getting here. He doesn't have that walk in as the leader power like LeBron does by the sake of just his play the way that LeBron does. I don't know. I think LeBron's going to be able to kind of mold these young guys the way that he wants them to, because that's really the thing that the Lakers have been missing, both on the court. They lost so many games in the last moments where it's like, who do we draw this play up for? Okay, KCP is chucking a three with, you know, right, a hand in his face. And I like KCP, don't get me wrong. It just, Lakers didn't have that guy where it was like, go get us a bucket in the tight game with 2 minutes left. And off of the court from a, like, that's LeBron James. I've been watching him since I was 8 years old, which is true in a lot of these kids' cases, you know. I think that it's going to be LeBron molding the guys more so than anybody, anywhere else that he's been.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is an important thing that I got to see going from the Clippers to San Antonio and then bring with me back to the Clippers was the difference between a championship locker room and a regular NBA locker room. There's a mentality and attitude and a work ethic. Like, the young kids work hard. There's no question about it. We've seen all the work these guys put in. They all look jacked now on Instagram and things like that, and they've all put in their time. But there's also an element. There's just a certain level of, you know, LeBron's going to come in and kick it up another notch. And I think these kids are going to see that. And I think that kind of leadership is something that's big. I think, you know, part of it is him grooming, you know, Lonzo into how to be a leader. You know, I don't know how you felt last year when Lonzo walked away from the scuffle. I know it was,
right,
you know, and that whole thing. And he's like, nobody fights. And I agree with him. Nobody really fights in the NBA. But you still have to go into
you got
to
be there. You got to walk into it, not away from it.
Yeah. You got to show that I'm with you guys. You can't. That's a very bad look. The optics is bad, right? And I get it. Nobody's throwing a punch. Hell no. That's a suspension and loss of money. You know, you got to really hate somebody in the NBA to throw the punch. And I think, you know, I think there's a level that LeBron's going to kind of be able to take him under his wing and show him, like, that kind of leadership stuff and that sort of attitude. And how to prepare properly for games is, you know, it's different. It's something, you know, as a video guy, I learned, you know, and when I went back to the Clippers, and I also knew when we didn't have it, you know, when that second run with the Clippers, when we were going on that, we were on that big 16 game win streak. We were undefeated in December, and I'll never forget it, because we're in Phoenix and we come back and we beat Phoenix, but we played sloppy this whole game. We didn't look good. We weren't that engaged. This is, you know, I think game 13 in a row we're about to win or whatever. And the you know, Matias, the assistant equipment guy, comes walking in and just turns to me and goes, like, we're about to get that ring. And I looked at him and just started laughing. Like, first off, it's December. Second, like, we don't work hard enough. Like, we're not there. Like, I knew then, like, we're not.
Right, you'd seen it elsewhere, what it's supposed to look like.
And it's not that I won a championship there, but it was the preparation and that organization being a championship organization. I just knew we weren't there. And it wasn't that we couldn't get there. I just knew we weren't there yet. And I kind of laughed at Matias going, like, we're not getting that ring. And, you know, the funny part is, at the end of that game, you know, we had, like, a mini team meeting, you know, about our effort, you know, and a couple of players stepped up saying that was not acceptable, you know, and I think that's kind of the stuff you're going to get from LeBron that you didn't have in the locker room last year. You know, who was going to step up and, you know, and really say anything? I mean, if you blew a game down the stretch, you know, because of somebody being selfish or something, there was nobody really was going to say anything. It's on Walton. But after that, it's like, you need players. The best thing that can happen for a team is when players police themselves. You know, that makes things a lot easier for the coaches. Not every team does it. Not every championship team does it. But it's helpful. When you have a guy like LeBron, like, when he speaks, it's going to be silent. Everybody's going to listen. You know, Rondo's coming from a wealth of experience, and another guy. And I think those two guys can really help and groom Lonzo into being that next leader for the Lakers.
I'm skeptical about Lonzo's leadership ability. At least I see it from him from on the court. Like, I think his one thing, he missed 30 games last year. When he played, the Lakers rarely ever had a down game from an energy perspective. He is really a catalyst for the Lakers' energy, or was last season. And I think that's going to be very helpful when you have these older guys with old legs. Like, I think he's going to help win some games that LeBron in the, you know, on a Wednesday in January is just like, look, I'm not going 100% today. I'm saving myself for the playoff run or what have you. I think LeBronzo is or LeBronzo. I think Lonzo. I think Lonzo is a you know, leadership by example. I think he has some potential there, but just from a, like, leading other young men. To me, Kyle Kuzma is that guy. From being in the locker room, like, the Lakers. I think the Lakers organization is higher on Kyle Kuzma than people realize. And from being around all of them, he's the guy that stands out to me is that's the guy that the other young guys follow. Like, it wasn't like Brook Lopez was following Kyle Kuzma, but if you look amongst the young guys, from the dynamic that I saw, Kuz was actually the guy that has potential to be that down the line.
I could see that, but I think the importance is that it does need to come from Lonzo, though. You know, the if this is the guy they've pushed for the past year of, he's our guy, he's the next Hall of Famer and all that, like, it kind of needs to come from him. Now, it doesn't have to be an extremely vocal leader. Doesn't mm-hmm. have to be the, you know, this and that. I mean, there's quiet leadership. I mean, we've seen it with Tim Duncan and stuff, but I think it's, there's gonna have to be some molding with it. You know, one of the best advice I ever got from, he was the first assistant coach I ever worked for, Trevor Schickman at Santa Monica College. And when I kind of told him, I'm serious about getting into coaching, like, this is what I want to do. And one of the most important things he said to me was, you have to learn from every coach you study under, but you can't be them. You have to learn what they do and somehow manipulate it and apply it to you and how you can use it. And I think that's Lonzo. What Lonzo has to do is see how LeBron leads, how Rondo kind of commands the offense. And Lonzo has a good command of that, but it can be better. Again, because he's 19, 20 at this point.
Right.
You know, he can learn how these guys do it and then put it into the Lonzo way of doing it.
So let me ask you this, Mo, from your experience. So I can tell, I feel pretty confident that Lonzo, just as a person, removed from basketball, he's not the type of vocal leader, right, that's going to rally the troops and get guys to follow him in that respect. But you mentioned, like, a Tim Duncan, like a quiet leadership. What does that look like in practice for guys that are not your rah-rah type of guys, but your leaders by example? Like, I see Lonzo more in that mold. What does that look like when it's done at the highest level?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. It's everything. It's attention to detail. It's putting the extra practice time in. It's allowing yourself being coached. And part of being coached is getting yelled at from time to time, you know, and taking it and studying it and not trying to necessarily fight back. You know, it's being a calming influence in the locker room and sort of, you know, when a guy's down, kind of just walk, like, put your arm around him and hey, it's, you're going to be all right. It's putting in the extra hours, you know, whether watching film, whether getting extra shots up, whatnot. It kind of just becomes a contagious sort of thing. You know, there were many times where I would be in the video room with the other video guys and we would hear a ball bouncing on the practice court at, you know, like 9:30 at night, and it's Tim Duncan on the gun. You know, and just getting free throws or extra shots or whatever. And for some guys, it's just a sanctuary thing and things like that. But it's kind of known that this is the stuff that's going on. And I think that is a key that, you know, and it's hard now because, listen, Lonzo's 20, right? Or maybe 21. I'm never
good. He's 20. He'll be 21 in December.
They're all babies to me.
Yes. So, yes.
you know, so I mean, like, it's not like he can just have that now, but there's also a calm sort of power in that. You know, it's not just Tim Duncan. You know, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had it. Like, you know, he just sat down and you can feel it in the room of just some sort of power, and it's a calm kind of thing, but you also just feel like there's a real strength there. And I think that's something that, you know, Lonzo's going to have to figure out how to do. Because you're right, he's not a vocal guy. Like, I don't, you know, it's just, it doesn't seem like that's who he is. And I don't think that's somebody he can just become. You know, I think he's not going to be Draymond Green, you know, screaming right. and yelling and da-da-da. You know, that's kind of more Kuzma. And they can kind of have that, you know, Steph Curry and Draymond sort of Kuzma and, you know, Lonzo sort of being that sort of yin and yang kind of thing. But I think there's a level that he has to kind of get to, though, to really get to that next level as a player.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I'm just curious of what that will end up looking like.
Yeah, and it's hard because, you know what, like, here's the thing, and I hate that I do it because we all do it from time to time, but I hate whenever I see it. Comparing these guys or asking these guys to be, like, the best ever at that, it's like, dude, that's just tough, man. Asking me to be the be like the best ever Doc Hill, like, yo, I come from a huge, amazing family. Like, I don't know if I can reach some of those heights, you know? Like, there are some all-time greats, you know? You know, Tim Duncan's a Hall of Famer, and we can argue whether he was the best big man, best power forward or whatever. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is still, I don't think anybody's ever going to catch him for all-time points. It's one of those things. Like, these are legendary guys, you know? So it's hard to kind of put that pressure on him. But unfortunately, that's kind of the game, right? And the expectations that have been placed on him. So he's got to get there.
This is something that Kobe spoke about last year, about from the outside, we need to have patience and understand that these guys are young and things like that. But they shouldn't have that mentality. They need to have a sense of urgency in order to get to where they want to get to. They should be striving to be like LeBron, striving to be like Duncan, Kareem, guys like that. Like, and if they don't get there, like that'll determine itself one way or another. But they can't have the mentality of, oh, I'm only 20, I'll figure it out someday. Because if they do have that mentality, they won't figure it out someday. So internally, they need to be pushing themselves. And that's one of the good things about this group, is there's a good competition and peer pressure in terms of who's getting there earlier, who's staying there late, who's putting more work in, who's gotten their body right. You know, that's very much the culture that the Lakers and Rob Pelinka specifically have been trying to build. And so they're on their way. I do think they have that sense of urgency.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. You know, the appropriate amount of fear is something that everybody needs. You know, that's a Spurism that a Popism that I've stolen, and I'm crediting it to him. So if anybody wants to correct me, they can do it elsewhere. But I also have a secret key for Lonzo, and this is something I'm happy to know that very few people listen to the podcast, so I'm not too worried about this becoming too big of a getting outed, but I'll share it with the few that are on. If he wants to be great, he needs to improve his intake of gelato. Okay. And Pete, I know the best gelato place in all of the land. Okay, Gelateria Uli's is the best gelato you'll ever had. I actually had it this weekend. We had a great dinner, and they came over and brought some pints. They brought a banana white chocolate gelato that'd make you slap your mama. Dude, that thing was so good.
Sounds amazing.
It was phenomenal. We had a lemon lime sorbet that was just phenomenal. Fig almond, like I was blown away. I mean, I could have skipped dinner and just had the pints, but I had to share with everybody, so I couldn't do that. But like, amazing. I highly recommend it. They have two locations, one in downtown Los Angeles in the Spring Arcade on 5th and 6th Street, on Spring, in between 5th and 6th Street, excuse me. And then they have a newer location by the Beverly Grove on Crescent Heights and 3rd Street. Gelateria Uli's, I highly recommend it. Great gelato, great people. And if Lonzo wants to be great, he needs to start getting some of those pints, and he can get to that level.
I did not see that segue coming. That was very well done.
Yeah, no, that's like my favorite one. It's easier to work in gelato, I think, than Brand Active Media. And I love the guys at Brand Active Media, but it's a little easier to work in food in general.
you did that one well too. I rolled with the, you know, who do you want in the photo booth, and then there we were. It was very well played.
Yeah, well, no, I'm glad. That was probably one of my best ones.
All right, nicely done. Yeah.
Let's talk now a little bit about how LeBron's arrival affects the Clippers and LA in general. Cuz, you know, it's been an interesting run for the Clippers. You know, we had our chance, you know, when we had CP and Blake and Mo the video guy. We had our run to really capture LA, and it felt like we were kind of getting there, but I always knew deep down, I said, this is a Laker town. It doesn't matter. I mean, the Lakers were having some down years. I knew still that was still coming. You know, the vibe was still a Laker thing. We were just the flavor of the month, so to speak. And we never capitalized. We never got past the second round. And now both, you know, now all three of us, the amazing trio of Blake, Chris, and Mo are no longer part of the Clippers, and DJ for that matter. It's a thing, you know, like it almost like they're at level ground with the Lakers, and now LeBron comes, and it's like nobody even knows who the Clippers are anymore.
That's the way it's supposed to be, Mo. I'm sorry to break that to you, but that is the natural order of things being restored.
Okay.
Well, I have to have a little bit of that Lakers exceptionalism streak to me. Even me, man. I've got that in me.
Well, you know, I'll give you a really funny story. This was I think I was an intern for the Clippers, or it might have been the first year I was a full-time employee. And I'm out with some friends, and you know, we're all at a place, and I'm chatting up a girl, and we're talking about what I do. And I'm like, oh, I work for the Clippers. And her first response was, who's that? And mind you, she grew up in LA.
Oh no.
And I'm like, oh, we're the other NBA team with the Lakers. Now, she wasn't a big sports fan, but she knew the Lakers.
Sure.
I was like, oh, she's like, I know the Lakers play at Staples Center. Where do you guys play? And I said, I go like, we also play at Staples Center. At that point, I just tucked my tail in between my legs.
And yeah, like, cut your losses. Man.
I was like, yo, I'm going home. Like, I think my boys just saw me going from being all happy to just my shoulders dropping and just,
what's a Clipper?
I was like, I just kind of dropped. So, but we had made big strides once we got CP. In that regard, you know, the Clippers are just hoping you guys are a shit show this year.
And yeah, there's definitely disaster potential, right, for this group of guys. I don't think it will be, but it's there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, people get mad with the range. You know, my range of where the Lakers can finish is, I think they could finish anywhere between 5 and 10. I think more likely 5 and 6, you know, seed kind of thing in the playoffs. But I could see a scenario where they could be out of the playoffs too. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
To me, LeBron has to get hurt for that to happen. Like, I just don't see, because LeBron. So I saw LeBron in person for the first time last season. I've just never caught him in person, and I saw him as a media member last year. The biggest thing that stood out to me is I was like, this dude's going at like 40%, and he still had like nearly a triple double in the game. Right, he was still great, but he has so much more capacity when he needs to have it. And the way that the Western Conference is from that, you know, in that range, is it's pretty close together, that 5 to 10 seed, right? And so, you know, a game or two can be the difference between you being 6th, 3rd, or 10th. And if LeBron needs to turn it up, he has the capacity to do so. I just don't see, barring a LeBron injury, LeBron will get the Lakers to the playoffs. I just have a hard time seeing. Now, where the seed is, I don't know, but he'll get them there unless they're hurt.
I mean, there are people going as far as, like, they're going to be the second best team in the West. I think that's a bit much, because I think there's a learning curve for the first few months, you know,
yes.
And figuring it out. And the problem is, you know, the West is so stacked in general. It's every night's pretty much almost a world beater in the Western Conference.
Right.
The thing is, losses in November and December end up really hurting you come April, right? And
yes,
that's kind of the, my question is, how quickly can they get up to speed and get everybody together and stuff? So that's kind of where I think they're a playoff team. I think there's a potential to not be, but again, you know, it's still they're not a mortal lock, but like, I would be shocked if they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I am a little more bullish in terms of their range. I think it's from 3 to 8, because as I said, I argued their floor, barring an injury, is, you know, still getting into the playoffs on LeBron's will alone. And the third seed, the difference between the third seed and the 10th seed actually was not that much. So I don't think they catch Houston. Houston, I think, takes a bit of a step back from last year, but they were still, what, 65 win team or something like that. So, I mean, they win 10 fewer games. They're still at 55. I don't think the Lakers get to that point, right? So I don't see them getting higher than third, but the difference between third and even 10th is so small that I think the Lakers, if everything breaks right, could get to that 3 seed.
Yeah, see, I think Oklahoma City would have been the third seed last year if Robertson didn't get hurt. I think, you know, I think Utah, with their continuity this year, and if they can get a healthy Dante Exum to kind of play, not full on to his potential, but just kind of almost be their Robertson, I think they are a 3-4 kind of team. So for me, I have those teams better than the Lakers. I think continuity really matters.
Yeah. If I were predicting the West, I'd probably be Golden State, Houston, OKC, and then Utah at the 4 seed, with the Lakers coming in at number 5. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for those teams. Like, I do think OKC will be good this year, and they'll have, you know, that continuity. I kind of question the Schroeder pickup. But anyhow, the Lakers, I don't think the difference between those were is enough to where one injury one way or another can, you know, help swing that.
All right. Well, let's go back to the original question, which we got sidetracked.
Sorry, Mo.
We both got sidetracked. Doesn't matter. You know, the effect on LA in general, like, here's something that I don't think people realize. You know, even when the Lakers were struggling, they still outdrew the Clippers while we were doing well. It was still, the fans still came out. It was still an event to go to a Laker game. I just feel like now it's going to be a freaking gala when you go to a Laker game now. I think we're going to have Jack Nicholson at more games than not. I think, you know, we're going to get back to that area where that whole court side is just going to be filled with stars, which was, we kind of seen it last year, like people were curious, but I think that this next season with LeBron, you're just going to see all the stars come back for the Laker games. And, you know, and I think that's kind of just the effect that he's going to have on LA and really kind of the excitement for Laker basketball again.
Very much so. It also has the other effect of there will be no, the Lakers won't be slept on by any opposing teams as well, right? Like, they're, you're coming into LA with LeBron and all those stars in the crowd, like you say, like, they're not going to get any cheap wins because the team, you know, the opposing team was out too late the night before and takes the Lakers for granted. Nobody's going to do that this year. But yeah, just, I've felt the last couple of seasons from going to games, even more so last season as a media member, that Laker fans are just ready to explode. And they've been just waiting for, you know, whether it's Lonzo or they love Kuzma at Staples Center. You know, they're just ready to blow the roof off of the top of the place. It's the longest stretch of poor play in Lakers history. And they're just, you know, so and they've stuck by it and they've, you know, been enthusiastically, they've attended the games and whatnot. They're really ready for this to be a special season. So team has to come through on that.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing there. Let's look a little bit to the future, because obviously big news over the weekend about Luol Deng finally agreeing to being a bought out or a stretch, and the Lakers, you know, waived him and all that fun stuff, which opened up, again, a crap ton of money for next season. Obviously, we know the eyes are on Kawhi Leonard and can they bring him from Toronto? I want to put it to you this way, because I personally think Kawhi ends up staying in Toronto. I think if Toronto has the year we expect, I think he's going to end up staying there.
I think that's possible. I don't have enough of a read on Kawhi, and you would have much better of a read than I do.
Let's be honest, nobody has a read on Kawhi.
Right, there you go. Right.
Unless your name is Uncle Dennis, nobody has a read on Kawhi. This is all guessing. This isn't, yes. You know, this is again, nobody listens. So a year from now, I can totally be like, I told you he was coming.
Right.
It's fine. Nobody has an actual read on Kawhi. So let's assume Kawhi isn't coming. Okay. I think Klay is definitely staying in Golden State. I think I would be shocked if he moved, because that dude he's living the life out there.
yes.
That leaves a few options. I don't think KD would come, just based on how much backlash he would get by teaming up with LeBron after leaving the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know Jimmy Butler's out there. Who else is? Like, what would it, these guys are off the table. Jimmy Butler's available, but I can't even think who else is available. But what do you think? Like, what do they got to do? Who's the next guy, you know, that they got to bring in?
I think Butler for them is their
safety school.
Right. That's the term I'm looking for. Thanks for saving me there, Mo. I think Butler comes if they make an offer for him, but I do think they're going to make a run at Durant. I have those same questions that you do. Like, if Durant is unhappy with the backlash that he got from going from OKC to Golden State, like, the only place that Durant could go and still not be considered it being his team is probably the Lakers, right, with LeBron, right? Like if you want to get away from that problem, you just walked into the same problem elsewhere.
Bigger problem. Bigger. It looks even worse.
Right. That said, the Lakers cleared almost exactly enough space. Like by the buyout that Deng had, they're at 38.2 million approximately in cap space for next year, which is like exactly what they would need to sign Kevin Durant at the 10-year max. He's eligible for more money than other guys are because of his service in the league. So they're going to make a run at him. Guys like Magic and Pelinka, like, they don't come at it from the perspective of, oh, we're probably not going to get this guy. They're certainly not going to approach Kawhi like that either. I think they're going to shoot for, in order, Durant, Kawhi, Clay, and then Butler. And I think Butler, like you said, is their safety school. So under the circumstances that you described where those three are off the table, I think Butler comes.
And my concern with that, at him being your safety school, are a few things. One, I could see him getting traded this season. If Minnesota's smart, I think you move him. I think he's not happy. I would be shocked if he were to re-sign there. I think the other thing, too, about Butler that scares me is, you know, playing for Tibbs is like playing three years in the NBA.
Yes.
One season is three, because he just runs these dudes into the ground. We've seen it with so many guys who just don't have the legs anymore. So I'm a little bit concerned there. The other side of it, too, is you can probably get him on a little bit of a cheaper deal than those other guys. Obviously, Durant for sure with the 10-year service. Every deal after that's going to be cheaper. It's going to be an interesting thing, and that's my concern going forward. Is if somehow these four guys are off the board, I don't see anybody else, you know, kind of really interested. Or anybody that really moves the needle that much, unless he finds a way to patch things up with Kyrie. which is unlikely. That's the concern for me of that thing. Cause I honestly, here's the thing. And I haven't said it publicly. I've said it to a few friends. So I'll just say it now. Again, cause nobody listens. I feel like the thing that was very interesting to me about Kawhi and the Lakers was Kawhi was all about the Lakers. And then the moment LeBron signed, we started to hear, you know, well, he would consider signing long-term with, like, Philly, you know, right. and that was something where I was like, no, wouldn't you be more about the Lakers? Like, that's something where I'm not sure. There were a few things where there were a couple of rumblings where, like, no, he'd rather play for the Clippers now, and he wants to be the man. So I don't know necessarily if his interest level is there. And for me, for KD, if KD wants to get everybody off his back, he just needs to go to the Knicks.
Yeah, you should probably get Clyde Frazier to stop talking crap about him if that's the plan for me.
Listen, man, this stuff, man, all gets washed under the handsome man handshake, you know, all deal. You know, you give him bring him in for a hug. Like, that stuff will get worked out. Like, I'm never too concerned too much about that. Like, that's something you could fix. in that regard, because it's Clyde Frazier, dude. He's old. Don't worry about it.
Right. You know. Well, the same thing didn't work out as well for Bruce Bowen in the Kawhi pursuit for the Clippers, right? So I do think those things matter to some degree. But yeah, at the end of the day, that said, does Durant... So, like, I understand Durant wanting to... Or maybe us wanting Durant to go to a place where it's his team, he's the king of New York type thing. Is that a stable enough organization, though, for him to be like, I want to play there?
I think with Fizdale, we're going to see a very interesting Knicks. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team or don't anybody go nuts or anything like that. But I think I feel like you finally have a coach that I'm comfortable with that I feel like the players kind of love. Like, listen, Memphis took a lot of heat when they fired him. You know, all these dudes took shots at him. I mean, remember, there were rumors, I'm sure you heard them, of the Lakers should consider firing Walton and hire Fizdale to guarantee LeBron. You know, like, there are all these crazy things, right? But it's like, but he carries a weight with him and has a way about him. You know, it's a new regime with the Knicks, you know, this past season. I think another thing that really matters is what's the story with Porzingis and his health? And that's something that's kind of... you know, kind of scary. Like, as much as we talk about Embiid's health and everything, I'm like, that dude in New York hasn't been exactly a rock of solid health as well. So I think there's a whole element of stuff that, like, plays into it. But I think they're trending in the right direction. I actually kind of like where the Knicks are going with some of the decisions they've made. And I think it'll be interesting. I think guys will really rock with Fizdale. I think he's going to be – Fizdale should have been a college coach. He'd be a hell of a freaking recruiter.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and I think that's something with KD and that stuff. And I think that stuff does bother him. And we see how he reacts on Twitter and Instagram to these things. And so I'm excited for the NBA season, but I'm also excited for next NBA offseason.
For sure. For me, I think that's where Kyrie ends up, or I think he has a good shot of ending up in New York. Those are some of the things that I've heard that kind of rumor around the campfires that people expect Kyrie to end up there. And I don't know the Knicks cap situation well enough to see if they could make both of them work while keeping Porzingis, but it's an interesting idea for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it'd be an exercise for them. I know they have a few contracts that they'd probably have to move around. But the way I look at it now, listen, when everybody goes like that contract's not tradable, I'm like, every contract's tradable. Just right. How much are you willing to spend or willing to give up to make that trade? You know, and get that.
Next offseason, a lot of teams have money. It's similar to 2016 in that most of the league has it. And so there are going to be teams that lose out on their chosen free agent that have space that, yeah, you want to send over your bat, like a Joakim Noah, right, expiring type of deal. Send us a pick alongside that. We'll take that off your hands, absorb him for a year. Those type of deals happen all the time in summers like we got coming up.
And they might even stretch him. I don't know what it does to his numbers or anything like that after that. But, you know, after this season, he isn't a free agent. So, or I'm sorry, an expiring contract, not a free agent. Words, right. You know, I just don't do them sometimes. Pete, this has been a lot of fun, man. I've taken up a lot of your time. I had to get you out of bed to get you on. I'm sure you got a full day ahead of you. Plug what you're doing. Plug your call for interns and
I think I got enough of the
let everybody know where to find you.
You can find me at Laker Film Room on a bunch of platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. I'm writing for The Athletic now, which has been a ton of fun. It's been great to kind of have a long form platform to really get in the weeds on things. I'm creating videos for Silver Screen and Roll, the Lakers SB Nation blog. So, yeah, just Laker Film Room. I'm, you know, a little bit of everywhere, and that's where you can find me.
Perfect. Pete, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Let's be sure to grab that lunch soon.
We always say that.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, man. That's it for our show. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever else you go to listen to your podcast. You can support me at patreon.com/thejumpball, and always check out our stuff at thejumpball.net.